Welcome back to Women Making Moves, where we celebrate the moves that women are making. My name is Amy Pons, founder of Unlock the Magic, Coaching, Healing, and Magic School. I'm joined today with Isri Maranwe. Isri is a Silicon Valley born and raised tech leader who has represented the U.S. government in Washington, D.C., and now lives in London. She is the CEO and founder of YouVoice, the new social media company that rewards users for tangible impact. She's also the CEO of The Sentinel by YouVoice, building the largest citizen journalism force in the world. A Georgetown-educated cybersecurity attorney who has represented clients from Fortune 500s to indigent people. Isri has been a global law scholar and international law, worked at a top 10 law firm, and worked with the U.S. Departments of State, Defense, and the Federal Communications Commission. Isri received the Outstanding Achievement Award from the U.S. Office of Secretary of Defense for her work on civic education and the Out in National Security Award. Isri has also been a journalist for the Boston Globe, the Washington Times, and top writer on Medium with several viral pieces in life, business, love, and politics. Isri is a speaker, notably a 2-time TEDx and 5-time Medium, and has over 350,000 followers as a policy analyst and tech influencer. She is an AI ethicist, speaker, and expert and consults with the Gen AI Academy. She coded machine learning algorithms as a teenager. Isri has a science and tech background in particle physics at CERN and supernova cosmology at the Lawrence Berkeley Lab, where she worked under Nobel laureate Saul Perlmutter. Experienced in Python and C++, she taught law students Python at Georgetown Law with famous professor Paul Ohm. Isri is also the founder of the viral mentorship nonprofit Dweebs Global, a speaker, including 2-time TEDx, and an author represented by Watson Little Agency. Isri, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Likewise, I'm a big fan of your work, specifically after, you talk about everything, which is amazing, but there's really a post recently that I wanted to chat with you about. And I was like, let's see if we can chat on Women Making Moves, just learn more about you and the work, and let's just have a chat. So
yeah,
what's on your heart today?
What a good question. I think for me, something that's been weighing on me a lot lately is the juxtaposition between professional success and even professional privilege, and then personal ups and downs, and just the world being the world that I think many people in social justice or impact have to make, the balance between making sacrifices to make the world a better place and keeping yourself protected and sustain what the work you're doing, which often requires boundaries. So I think that very fine balance is on my mind and heart today.
I really feel you on that, because often I'll say, many of the people that I serve will say, I feel like I should be doing more. It's like a should. And I often remind them, part of this is making sure, not part of it, I feel that almost all of it is making sure that you have built something inside you that creates your own okayness, your own safety, your own enoughness, so that you can figure out what your place in this time and space is in the world. But if you don't have that, like you said, that really that internal check-in and making sure you're okay first and really clear on how you want to show up in this space and time, it's really easy to get lost in all of it, whether it be through this show or other ways. I don't know if you agree with this. I feel that there's room for the way everyone shows up in the resistance. It looks different for everybody. And when folks shame or blame folks for not getting involved, it's like, okay, but like, maybe it's just that they don't have a capacity that day. I don't know. We don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a really good question. I think in general, what I have found is it is much more helpful to spend time empowering people who want to make a difference than trying to convince people who either don't have the bandwidth or don't want to or are plain evil. I don't care like where on the spectrum, right? Like, it's such a waste of time and energy to focus on those people. And I have found that about 1% of people genuinely will stand up and will not go along with the societal default. A lot of people who say that they will stand up actually just go along with the societal default. And so that's why it's so important for the default to be changed to something that's more beneficial for everyone. If there's a societal expectation that you stop to help people in certain situations, people will do it. If there's an expectation that you are proud to pay taxes or something, live in a country where taxes are useful, you know, then people do it. If there's an expectation to care for your neighbors, to give people rides to an airport, etc. I think you frequently see this online when there's cultural clash and people are like, you know, you need to have boundaries. I can't believe you're doing this thing. And to that person in their culture, they're like, this is like basic. This is not something that for me, feels like I'm going out of my way. So it's not going to build resentment. It doesn't take as much effort, et cetera. So those 1% who are society shapers, I think it's so important that we try to, who are good society shapers. I know there's another, like, I would say 5% of people who are bad society shapers, really empower them. And so that's what, like, my work is in, and that's where I really like to focus. So occasionally I will get upset and I will be like, more people should do more things, and why are you staying quiet? I do think it helps to like spur action. I actually love being able to express how I'm feeling online. But when it comes to my actual work and my energy and my time that I'm spending, I have found it much more useful to focus on empowering good people than trying to convince other people to get with the program.
Yeah, I mean, I spent 20 years in corporate America and then realized I was meant to be a pioneer for the new existence. And so I remembered that I'm a coach and energy healer. And so a lot of times what I talk about is it's not my responsibility or job to, if you want to use, I mean, a spiritual term is like awaken or remember, things like that. It's not my job to awaken someone. It's that when someone remembers and wants to return back to their unique brilliance, their unique soul, that's where I come in and help champion that. I think we're saying similar things. And I used to be, I think at the beginning of my work in this chapter, I was kind of hell-bent on like waking people up at the beginning. I don't know if that was like just being a newbie and I was just excited about the work. Did you ever have that phase where you did want?
I think I was, it was mostly because I was argumentative, especially as like a teen and young adult. I was very hot-headed and I was like, you are being so stupid and I can logically prove that you are wrong. And people don't care, right? Like very often they're making internal inconsistencies. And so I just learned that it is not worth my energy to sit and argue, leave it be. I'm not going to talk to you anymore. I just going to focus on other people. And I do think naming and shaming sometimes is important, but it also has to be very impact focused. Like what is actually happening from this post, this action, this thing that I'm doing, is the impact good or bad? You see a lot of people post like bragging posts on social media, right? And a lot of people are like, read the room. And I often call people out. I'm like, here's the thing, right? Like I understand your desire to celebrate this win, and it is so important. And you're right to call people out that they're not able to celebrate the win. But can we talk about the actual impact of this post? If the impact is you're going to make 1,000 people feel bad, like they aren't earning enough, happy enough, achieving enough, and you know that because you're not phrasing this post in a way that's giving helpful advice, it's not giving, and you're an influencer, so you already get enough attention. Does your happiness actually, is it worth how many people you make unhappy? Or if you and the other people who will celebrate this post, right? And it's a very microcosm of a larger scale, but I try to ask myself that before I post, like, what's the actual impact of what I'm saying? Because sometimes people get so caught up in sounding right and righteous anger, and sometimes
Right.
it's just like, okay, but does this do anything though?
Right. Because I love some good rage. I love righteous rage. Love it. That's where getting into like sacred feminine goddess vibes and like raging out. It's like very Kali energy, like burning it all down so we can build the new. Yes. And I love what you're saying because if we don't have a then what, meaning like moving through the rage to be able to create, that's my biggest piece is feel the rage and then get to the create. And I absolutely want everybody to feel their feels, but I love what you're saying around in general. The vibe of the new paradigm is to not make anyone feel less than. And there's some fundamental beliefs out in the wild, of course, that are rooted in making others feel less than. So it's like trying to meet someone that already perpetrates the less than without making them feel more less than. It's like, ah, it's just a lot. So to your point, I feel like your check-in. If you're checking in with your truth center and it is spot on, go, run, because that's the truth center talking. And it's not like our human selves, it's like bigger than that. So, and then the reason I say it that way is because sometimes I will get like a, I get like a ping to say something out loud. And I'm like, my human self is like, ooh, that's going to ruffle something. And it's like, right, that's the point, say it. So it's like a, it's that balance. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think everybody has to sort of figure out what their like thing is and then pursue it unabashedly, because world, this moment in the world aside, you have one life, right? Do you really want to live it being a miserable, terrible?
Well, and that's where I feel like I know where we have a like very different philosophies perhaps, or but for me, astrologically, I feel as souls, all of us signed up to be at this very space and time for a reason, and like we wanted to be part of the systemic change, and people are at varying parts of that spectrum of the systemic change, but it's really kind of interesting to see who's being the catalyst for which change, like which aspect of the change on any given day. Like today, I'm, like I said, day one of my bleed. I'm like crampy, grumpy, and I'm not as warm and cushy today. So it's like, okay, but it just gets to be like where you can show up for yourself each day. Just being that authentic voice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've been drawn to you for a long time, Sri, and I'm really inspired by your work and, to use your word, unabashedness, because that, to your point, no matter how someone, like when you are standing in your truth center and you're saying something that is to your core, truth and belief, and something that you are activating for, and it impacts someone else, it's both not yours. It's not your responsibility for how it lands with someone, but also it's a great responsibility to your point. So
Yeah.
when I saw your post, it's Renee Good's photo,
Yeah.
and I'm just going to read a little bit of your post, and this is what I was drawn to bring you on and talk more about. This is Renee Good, and ICE shot her in the face. She did not attack them. She did not run. She let other cars go by and gestured for ICE too as well. She was backing away. The officer could easily have gotten out of her path instead of stepping forward to shoot her. She was a white, conventionally attractive U.S. citizen mother. And even if none of those things were true, she did not deserve to die. There's been quite a few people die. There's been a lot. What made you go with this post specifically and talking about Renee Good specifically?
Yeah, so I think Renee Good had a real moment in, I would say, like awakening a lot of people to what was going on. I think what is fascinating is what people decide is the red line. And I think this is a moment that became for a lot of people a red line. I think ICE in general for a lot of people has become a red line. And this is despite the fact that cops in general have been doing things like this for ages. In brown and black communities, especially black communities in the United States, for decades. And as somebody who's been in criminal justice reform since before George Floyd's, before, like, I think it became more of the public awareness, right? It's really disappointing to see people talk about things and then do nothing about them. And it is also sort of a very important toolkit to go ahead and be like, all right, we need to figure out how to move this forward. If this is what resonates with people and is going to get people to take action, then we should try and use it to take action. At the same time, I think it's a little bit irresponsible not to mention that, like, it doesn't matter if she's a US citizen, if she was mother, if she doesn't really matter. Like, nobody should, this should not happen to anybody. And I think that while Minneapolis has been fighting back to some extent post the Renee Good shooting, which is great, we still see ICE grabbing people off the streets in many, many different states that just are not getting any attention at all, to the point where people aren't even aware it's happening. So it's a good question because I mean I kind of cover everything that hits news. I'm a global policy analyst, right? Renee Good. It's like something that went super viral and like hit international news, and I think drew a lot of people's awareness to America, which is great. But at the same time, I do think it's important to recognize that this is definitely a systemic issue that is part of a larger systemic problem. I will actually note as well, I've covered other people and like it didn't go as viral because that's what people want to read about and see. And you know what? Like I said, I'm at this point very, very impact focused. If that is what it's going to take to stop this, then great. I'm still not seeing it stopping. So clearly, it wasn't actually a red line for a lot of people, but I was hoping that it would kind of, you know, awaken people to this sort of insane fear that so many of us live. I mean, I left America partly because I was tired of living in fear. And I think a part of it as well is empathy, right? And a lot of people struggle with empathizing with people who come from a different background or who are not citizens or whatever it is that they've decided to vilify because they simply haven't been educated about it and they haven't learned about it. And I mean, I would argue that makes them worse and like you shouldn't do that and that's terrible. And like I get angry about it. At the same time, how do I fix this? A part of it is thinking about what is going to resonate with them to create change now. I think in some ways, and this is a larger conversation that I've been having within my activist community as well, in some ways it's a privilege to just be able to talk about things and to just be able to react to things. And for a lot of people, including myself, for a lot of us, like we just have to figure out how to stop this now. Whatever way we can, we just have to figure out how to stop this now. And so I think I run into the same issue with people who try to both sides the same thing, where I'm just like, that's a privilege. It's a privilege to be able to look at things like that. It's not for a lot of people.
Do you feel, on some level, the most privileged have got to feel something for the systems to change? And in some ways, I think people were expecting after Renee Good, oh, it was a white woman. So clearly, to your point, like that, clearly that was the red line. Like, well, no, it wasn't. So there's part of me that's like not surprised when these things happen or unfold. But at the same time, I'm like, who is it going to have to be?
Yeah, where's the red line at this point? He's done thing after thing after thing. I thought grab them by the pussy was going to be the red line back in 2016.
Come
So I
on.
don't know anymore, frankly.
And that's what has made me a little crazy, but also like laugh about the files. I'm like, that's what people are gonna fall on your sword about. And it's right, I just love your thoughts on that too. And I don't know
Yeah.
how much I'll leave in about it, but it's like Really, y'all? We have to have these actually come out. First of all, if they do come out, they're going to be redacted. We've seen that. And then also, like, it's not going to do anything. People keep saying, like, he can't, they can't, the administration, they can't just keep doing things that are illegal. I'm like, they don't give a fuck. Like, they genuinely don't care. So I don't know what is actually going to stop the industry other than.
I think the reason people are like so like focused on the ballots is because they think it'll make a difference with his base, with Republicans. And we've already seen it doesn't, because there's already enough proof. There's already over 20 legitimate allegations in detail from women and girls, people who are underage, that he's raped them. Over 20. So at that point, I also question this. I'm like, what further do you need from the files? We already know he was involved, but I don't know at this point if it will affect his supporters' beliefs, because they do not care about literal facts. So
You use the word unabashed, which it seems like it's a cool theme. Unabashed. So if we looked at the 1 million women, 600,000 black women who were ousted from the workplace last year, I feel this administration gave corporations, workplace in general, an unabashed pass when they said DEI is done for organizations to be like, we actually don't want women in the workplace. We don't want black women in the work. We don't want
It's worse than
anyone.
that, actually. They started going after companies who had black women and who had people who had more better statistics and better quality, saying they were discriminating against white people. It got so bad that I have been in meetings with people where we're all like, okay, how do we make sure that we're protecting ourselves against suits by white men saying we discriminated against white men? And so when you're now afraid of that, you're obviously going to struggle with not hiring a white man or something, because you're worried about how that's going to look optically, which is insane. And I know more black and brown organizations, black and brown led organizations, that have done all this DEI stuff to promote and ensure they have white folks on their staff who are not necessarily as qualified as black and brown folks than I've ever seen from white-led corporations who care about having any sort of diversity in their ranks. And I think it's just bad business. Like, this is not a, like, the fact that they're willing to sacrifice their business case, because organizations and companies without black women, say, are just worse businesses. Like, it's just bad business.
It's
And
bad.
there's this illusion that, like, oh, like, just this very racist illusion that, like, oh, these people don't work as hard, and whatever race or gender, like, I hate them. And like, that's actually not true. That's not true. It's been proven time and time again. There's, I think, black women are the most college educated population. They have the most
Wonderful.
certificates, postgraduate certificates. They are in general overperforming their roles, right? So it's just bad business. So at the point at which corporations are willing to be racist when it is bad business, you know something's really, really wrong. And because these are just money making machines, and first of all, it shouldn't matter if it's good business, bad business. We're talking about the law, right? Which is, you cannot discriminate against people of color. But still, it's also bad business to discriminate. And they're still doing it because they're that afraid of economic repercussions if they're associated with the left wing or DEI. And yeah, it's all a complete nightmare. I have been speaking with a lot of folks, especially in that space. Like, you talked about the 600,000 black women who are out of work, and the institutions were trying to create me just as an ally to, like, think about how to get more people back in work, create our own seat, our own table, instead of trying to get a seat at the table. Right? How do we put money into black businesses? How do we have more startups? How do we get black businesses to succeed on an independent level? Because at this point, you can't trust, many people feel you can't trust a traditional company or a non-black run business to protect the interests of minorities.
That's fact. I know you know that, but I just wanted to reiterate that. So here's what I see unfolding. These big organizations are hiring like for like, able-bodied, cishet white men, but there's this wave happening with millennials and Gen Z that are actually not wanting to go into manager roles. We're going to get to a point, I feel, and maybe it's still a long way off, where X and boomer white men are at the helm. Nobody's stepping in. All the women and people of color are out. So what then? If they have,
Yeah, it's a great question. I
if they
think we're
have
gonna
no one
see.
to pass the baton to, which I don't care. let them fold in, fine. But like, what do they think is going to happen?
Well, we're seeing a lot of mass consolidation globally with large businesses buying out a lot of small businesses. So you don't need that many managers when you're basically passing a very nepotistic baton on to a few people who are in this quote unquote upper echelon, who don't care about work-life balance, and they are just watching numbers go up on a spreadsheet. So they're all miserable, but they want those managerial roles and to be miserable because they are still operating on this 1960s era of prestige. And then you have, like you're saying, a bunch of millennials and Gen Z who are like, hey, I just kind of want to be happy. I don't really care if I'm CE, whatever. Like, I just want to, be happy and do my own something and I don't really care about traditional markers of prestige. And yeah, that's definitely reshaping the workplace in a way that a lot of these oligarchs don't like. But what I would also say is there's a huge gender gap, and that is a really bad thing that's getting worse. And this is not only in the United States, but across developed countries worldwide. We are seeing it happen in Asia, we are seeing it happen in Africa, in South America, in North America, like Europe, everywhere, basically. You are seeing men get more and more conservative. Even young men, even teenage boys, are getting red-pilled or are becoming a part of the manosphere, and their political opinions are several percentage points right of where teenage girls the same age are. And this is a very new thing. Typically, people have the same political perspectives in the same communities and the same families, etc. Age ranges are typically the same. There's a lot less of a gender gap, and we're seeing an increase in the gender gap. And so the thing that I also think about, and you know, I'm queer, I'm very rooted in queer culture as a result, and I have a lot of queer friends. I question how like traditional heterosexual marriage is going to work if you have this massive gender divide where the average man and the average woman are not going to agree politically at all about basic human rights, and women are getting more and more independent, which is awesome. And they're like, I don't need a man, which is awesome. But men are getting more and more desperate for this, and they're getting more and more violent. And like, what now? And I think this is a problem that people are really not dealing with because they don't want to think about it. I do appreciate some governments are trying to fight like the manosphere red pill attitude because, you know, it's definitely better to, like, even for women who are looking for a partner, right? It's like better to be single than be with someone like that. So then you're going to have like these 2 to 5% of men who are great, who everybody like would like to maybe date. And those people are managing, but everybody else doesn't. And then this huge isolation, more importantly, gender segregation in work and school and life, where men are just talking to other men and like having their little male clique and they're feeding into it. Now what? And, you know, I've seen some really great posts lately about men aren't reading as much. Men aren't getting higher educated as much. Like, men are falling behind on math and reading. And again, this is a global issue. Okay, well, now what? Because they still have all these roles of power. They're still passing the baton to other men. They are still physically stronger on average, right? Like, so what's going to happen? Like, what is actually literally going to happen?
So I have this theory that there's going to be a Clash of the Titans, like very, if you saw the Barbie movie, they all just go after each other. So I feel that's going to happen where they all just implode. And then we're all over here that have created the new and we step in. Is that rose-colored glasses?
I think for me, a part of the challenge is like there's a lot of postmodern and feminist theory and a lot of stuff that I've really engaged a lot with in the West that I feel does not adequately solve the problems
Agree.
elsewhere. And
Absolutely.
it's like there are people who are still fighting for the right to like have their own bank account, to not be in a forced marriage. Like I know people. And there's this terrible thing that I keep hearing in, I would say, like America, the UK, etc., where it's this kind of very, very racist, insert phobic attitude that the quote unquote global South cannot modernize and cannot advance. And we should just observe how their weird little cultures operate because that's their culture and we should leave them alone because that's just how they are. And very often, when you talk to brown and black activists on the ground in these countries, right? So I've been specifically my background, I've been very involved in like Kenya, Nigeria, South Africa, India, Thailand, Myanmar, lots of other places, Philippines. I'm like just telling you some of Iran, some of these countries that I know people on the ground, talk to them, work with them, etc., or have friends there, right? It can be really jarring when all these values you agree with and these liberal ideals are then getting championed by people who support your oppressors at home. So I think that while it is, we are in a stage where like these conversations make a lot of sense to have in the communities we live in. Like I have so many thoughts about how to change like London or DC or these cities and where we need to go. It's very different conversations that I'm having in like Bangalore or Mumbai or something. It's like we're not even in the same sphere. Like you really cannot have the same kind of empowerment, the same kind of lessons, the same kind of solutions. And the only solutions I think that are global that we see replicate are things like, hey, educate men young that women are people too. And it's so basic, but it actually does work. And that is such a global issue. And so I'm still kind of at that level.
Oh, I was sitting over here thinking that Gen Alpha was coming out swinging and ready for the new world.
Unfortunately, like Gen Alpha boys are getting really red pilled.
Well, that sucks. I was really hopeful.
The other thing that's really scary is the education. And this is, I think, a US, luckily, I think a little bit more US specific, but we're just not seeing American education. Like, I have know so many people are teachers who are like middle school and elementary school teachers who are like, my kids can't read. They can't read like any letters. They can't do basic math. They're grade levels behind across the ball. People are graduating high school and college without basic reading skills now, and it's really terrifying.
Well, and like I grew up in Central Illinois, and my textbooks I know were whitewashed. I had an interesting conversation recently with a person from my graduating high school class that is now a teacher in the same school district that we both grew up in. And she showed me the history book, had the same cover that ours looked like when we were growing up, but it had been completely rewritten. So many aspects of even our whitewash versions had been whitewashed even more in the versions she was then being asked to teach. So that's something that I was like dumbfounded about. And there's this amazing charter school superintendent on the West Coast that created a school, and every summer she and her faculty ultimately write their own textbooks so that none of that happens, because she was like, you can't trust buying in bulk because those have all been washed out. So it's just interesting you bring up about education, because that's also something real, that there's not even going to be a moment where, let's say, the history of slavery in the US is even in a book.
No, it's pretty bad right now. It's still very whitewashed in the US. I mean, I would say this is another thing where we have reached a point where something's got to give. There's basically two Americas. There's two-tiered system of everything. There's massive oligarchical like control at this point. It's a completely business-centric government. It's becoming an oligarchical world. It's becoming a very authoritarian world as a result of that. The few last bastions of actually ranked democracies where people are like, there is some level of free speech, there is some level of every vote counts, things like that are still getting taken over by populism due to how easy it is to manipulate today's social media and today's narratives online. Because people are people. And again, 99% of people are going to kind of go along with the norms. So what the norm is and how you educate people is so, so important. If it is crazy to claim this completely non-scientific thing, then nobody claims it. But once you start normalizing it, once you start having debates about it, when there's really no credence to one side, you're lending a lot of credibility to something that's completely nonsense. And so I will tell you, like 15 years ago, nobody would have thought about having a serious debate about whether or not, like, I don't know, insert topic of conversation here. We talk about like abortion back in the 19. You know, even in the mid 1900s, right, like 1950s, people were not like, maybe we should ban abortion, because this wasn't a hot button issue. It became a question of money. It became a question of Republicans using it as a single issue topic to win elections. People often talk about the fact that abortion rights are more progressive in countries people typically look at as very regressive for women, which they are. Countries like India or Pakistan or Middle East or whatever. And the reality is just that it's not. For a lot of cultures, a lot of religions, and a lot of traditions, it's not the same thing that people look at it as, because it's not inherently that everybody must think this way about it. It's just what we've normalized. And so that's just one example, regardless of where anyone is on that issue. It's just one example of like, you're so, so used to your norms. It's like so hard to conceptualize a society outside of it and to restart and think about first principles. And this comes with education, because that's what you're doing with a child. A child does not have norms yet. A child does not know yet what is the societal standard. You teach them that some people are less than, or you don't teach them about slavery, you whitewash slavery, you teach them that people wanted to be slaves or something like that. You are crippling their ability to actually go out in the world and be a decent human being.
What's insane to me is cracking down on people who aren't white. I'm like, y'all, many of them didn't even ask to be here. Does anyone talk about that? And also, how far back does that go? Because none of you were here.
Yeah, I mean, I think I find the whole land and history of land very interesting, because again, something that's so dependent on what country you come from and like what counts as indigenous and how far back do you go and who uses that argument to claim this was my land first. So I have started to ask people, you know, what is better? What would make people happier and better and more successful now? And when you look at a lot of indigenous traditions in the United States about land and about communalism and about property, it would be better if we had some of those policies and cultures and laws in our country. And a part of the reason that we don't is because we, like historically the United States, right, genocided a bunch of indigenous Native Americans and just decided to do the opposite of what they were doing and were very cruel. And those policies have now petered down into this situation that is terrible for everyone. I know there's like this thing that people like to say nobody is illegal on stolen land. And in some sense, all land in the world has been stolen at some point. And I don't think anyone should be illegal anywhere as a result. We're human beings. It is very, very new in the grand arc of human history for you to not just be able to pick up and move somewhere else and live there now. Like, it is incredibly new to be like borders, you cannot cross, you need 20 pages of paperwork and this bureaucratic system, and you file for that's very new. People used to just pick up and move if they wanted to. That's like
Well,
historically, that's kind of how that was. It's like land is not like it's land, it's just it's not like.
nature, it's so nature, Mother Earth, Goddess Gaia. The whole goal with this planet was to create a place where you don't need anything. We don't need anything if you were to go back to nature, like the nature of the planet itself. And so, for instance, for me personally, I'm in Chicagoland, and every summer when I, or every spring when we plant a garden, I give an honor. I give offerings to the people of Peoria, the tribe of Peoria that were originally here, like where I reside. So just honoring like what the land has seen before you is what I vibe with, knowing that I originate from Scotland and UK. Like that's where my bloodline. But again, to your point, who knows if that was like literally where? I mean, well, it wasn't. So anyway, ooh, Isri, we oh, woo-hoo-hoo. Tell me about UVoice and the Sentinel, and how do we? Can
Yeah.
anyone join the social community? Can anyone subscribe to the Sentinel? Like, how do we all get involved in more of your work?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, you're kind of a little bit early, but so UVoice is a new social media marketplace platform. Basically, social media sucks. We want to fix it. That's that. Big thing we're doing is we are rewarding users for tangible impact instead of the fame follower content creation model. TLDR, social media today is not social and it is not media. It is about content creators and influencers, which is great. That is an important thing. It's an important business model. It is a different thing. We also need a space, a global town square, and a global village to communicate, to meet other people doing similar things, and to work together on projects. That is what UVoice is for. Solves a lot of problems with global marketplace issues, international payment transfers, building a community, building a movement, building a nonprofit, starting a small business, and all the home feed issues. Suppression of diverse voices that we are currently seeing on other platforms. So, solving all those problems in one. We are just closed our $1 million angel round, actually. So, it's
Congratulations.
incredible. I only used a lot of buzz about it, and we are going to be working on our product and our launch, and we're going to be doing a phased launch, working with specific partners over the course of this year, and we will eventually be publicly accessible and everybody will be able to get on the app. We are very intentional about doing this right and about building a good platform. This is not about making me a billionaire. And so we are not trying to just rush into the next thing and the next thing. Every stage, we are working in tandem with nonprofits to get the algorithm right, to keep it mentally healthy, to keep it sustainable, to produce an accessible product, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's no rush here. We're getting it right. The second thing that you were talking about, the Sentinel, is amazing and it's already out, is the Sentinel by UVoice. It is a global media platform, citizen journalism platform, and we are growing journalists from around the entire world, kind of like what we were talking about earlier with perspectives being very different globally. We believe that everybody can tell their story the best, and we don't need to fly in people from other countries to point behind them and talk about how people live. People can tell their own stories. And so we are aiming to break global news through the eyes of all of you, I guess, humans living through history. We have an incredible editorial team and a journalism team. We are growing the Sentinel Press Corps, which is citizen journalists press. We are an all-volunteer press corps. And the goal is to really have people who are passionate about a specific investigative journalism project or something happening in their neighborhood to share what's happening worldwide. That is at sentinel.uvoice.org. That is yuvoice.org. And you can absolutely read stories there, comment, get involved, submit stories. Just we have an incredible team. I am actually not involved in the editorial or journalism side, and that is to stay completely independent. We are apolitical, nonpartisan, and we'll never run ads, we'll never paywall anything.
Do you feel that there is any sort of mainstream, apolitical, nonpartisan news source today other than the Sentinel? Because one of the things I have heard, you know, people are like, oh, I just ignore the news because it's all biased anyway.
Well, I would say that despite the fact it's all biased, it's still news and someone's perspective. And so it's still worth knowing what's going on and not putting your head in the sand. Like, I read when the White House puts out a report, I read it. I don't agree with him, but I still want to know what he's thinking. I would say the Sentinel, we originally created it a couple of years ago, and we have only seen the need more and more. We have seen the New York Times, like what happened to that, and the Wall Street Journal is like what happened to that. You know, the Washington Post got bought out by Bezos, right? Like all these traditional bastions of journalism are just not anymore, and they're getting manipulated by billionaires and their interests. I mean, the AP, I think, is still a gold standard of international reporting because they fact check a lot of things on the ground, and that is an incredibly important part of reporting. Weirdly enough, I think there are UN special focus groups. They're not traditionally seen as journalists, but basically they are fact checking a lot of things on the ground, which is extremely valuable. I still do read a lot of the big papers in the world when they come up because I want to know what they are saying, and there are certain issues on which you can trust they are going to have interesting takes. I typically will read the BBC, I will read Al Jazeera, I read The Guardian. I vehemently disagree with them about some issues, and you can clearly see some topics on which they will have biases. But if you read, like, I read Deutsche Welle, I read the Hindustan Times, right? I read from different countries so that I am aware when they will be biased, and I'm reading other papers as well, but it gives me a more well-rounded picture of what's going on in the world. In the past 2 or 3 years, I would say almost all breaking news I've gotten on my phone first is when someone I know has texted me first. Very rarely am I like telling people something they don't already know. And I get a lot of on the ground news from people living in these countries, whether it's like a hurricane, whether it's natural disaster, whether it's something happening in the administration, somebody's probably texting me to be like, what do you think about this? And I find that very valuable too. So when people talk to me about this, I often tell people just have more friends who live around the world, like try to get have actual relationships with people around the whole world. And I'm very fortunate to have this with the Sentinel Press Corps and our Sentinel volunteer team as well, where we have access to some of those people and stories. But yeah, I think it's just I wouldn't have known about a lot of things if it weren't for people there, because sometimes there's a lot going on and it's a lot to keep up with.
I totally agree. Like, you don't have to believe everything that you read. And my sweatshirt says, "I proudly ruined the workplace" based on the recent New York Times. But I was like, y'all, don't take the bait. Like, this is clearly trying to suck everyone in, and they're making millions off of this story. And then I created the sweatshirt because my post was like, if it means bringing humanity in and all the championing the matriarchy, it's like, yeah, I ruined the workplace and I'm damn proud of it. But some of this is clickbait, I feel.
And this is why media needs to be nonprofit. That's it. Like, media needs to be nonprofit. There should be no money in good media because there's no money in good media. And the minute you put money into it, do you know how many top-notch papers let you pay to get featured? Either with a minor advertising line or no advertising line at all, or intentionally putting it really small so that people can't read it, or straight up staff taking money, which happens. So that's what happens when media is for profit. I think Wikipedia, for example, has so far outperformed encyclopedias in terms of how fact-based their content is. And obviously, they have a very complex system. They've had occasional issues as well. But they are essentially a nonprofit, right? And I think you kind of have to have some standards in media that are not driven by making money, because clickbait makes money, because advertising makes money. You're incentivized to make the system worse for users if you have to maintain a profit motive. So we're very, very proudly nonprofit. We'll stay that way.
Beautiful. As we start to wind down, there are a million reasons every single nanosecond to feel that there's not hope. It's just all doom and gloom. I personally feel like, kind of like we talked about earlier, it's like I find my own okayness throughout all that's happening outward because I get to. And what I mean by that is free will, autonomy, human. I get to choose what I allow myself to, what I read, what do I expose myself to. And I'm not ever putting my head in the sand, but it's like, again, that balance of what you have capacity for and how much. So what would you say to the folks that are really going through it because they are really entrenched with every single nanosecond of news or things they perceive? You know, shit's hitting the fan for sure. Absolutely. And maybe how do you personally find joy?
I actually think it's a great question. I happen to find a lot of joy, and I've worked really hard to be in a place where I can find a lot of joy, where I'm not upset or sad or depressed every day. And so I intend to keep that. I have a dog. Get a dog. Dogs are great. Or get a cat, whatever you like. I
I
think
have
that's
two
really
dogs. They are
important.
my two dogs are like my heart.
Exactly. So there you go. I think that's a huge, huge part of it. But more broadly, connecting with your community around you, the real people around you, your friends, your spouse, your kids, your network, whatever you, whoever you love and care about, like connectedness is key. There is a lot of push for isolationism right now. There's a reason for that. Isolation, gives companies more money, and you just kind of have to fight that and kind of get in touch with your community and the people around you and the animals around you, and just like, I think that brings a lot of joy. And that's kind of how I divide it. My profession is trying to make the world a better place. I still deserve a break from my profession. I still deserve time off. I deserve my weekends. That's my 40-hour week, or more like 60-hour week job, 80-hour week job. It's still that many hours a week job. I still get my breaks. I still get my space to relax. And if you feel your work is not making the world a better place, and for whatever reason you don't feel like you can leave it, you can still carve out dedicated hours where you are doing something that creates impact. And then you measure that. And then outside of that, you get your break. Also, this solving this problem is the crux of the voice. It's like, we can't keep doing this alone. A, we need to get rewarded. Like, activism cannot always be such a thankless job. It's not healthy. So how do we connect people? So now when you have an idea, you wanted to work on something, you can find somebody who'll do it with you. And that sense of community makes your life happier. Plus, you're achieving something in that time. Plus, you're getting credit for achieving it. And that's it. And then you log off. One of the big things we're focused on is anti-addictive algorithms, right? Like, you get off. You don't need to be scrolling all the time. You need to know enough, and then that's it. Close down. I need to stick to it, but I had started a newsletter last year, which I'm probably gonna relaunch, continue this year, which was basically like five things you need to know this week that are happening around the world, five news stories. And I'm kind of like, if that's all you do, that's all you do. If all you do is read the New York Times wrap, and I don't even like the New York Times, fine. You did. At least you did that. And now the question is, in the time you do have, what issue do you care most about? What impact are you going to create? It's a starfish story we all heard, right? Like, start somewhere. It's one starfish, still one starfish.
It is. You gave us great information about where to find the Sentinel and where you are at with YouVoice. So in between all of that, where can we support you personally? You've mentioned Medium, like where can we find you and support your work, whether it be funding or just simply following, supporting, whatever it is.
Yeah, no, thanks so much. I always like say, like, follow the Sentinel and YouVoice, not me, because honestly, the only reason I'm still out there as an influencer in marketing is because I care about these things being successful, but I am very active on LinkedIn. I am going to be back on TikTok. I'm at ISVARIM on TikTok, and I should be on Instagram, but realistically, am I going to do it? I don't know. If you want to get a hold of me by DMing on social media, the only place where that I ever respond is LinkedIn, and even then it's a little bit touch and go, but if you need to reach me, you can probably figure out how. So
The amount of times over the past year that I've left all platforms and like gone back and like I just keep I don't know.
it's hard. It's hard because it's really thankless and it's really miserable. And the algorithms are addictive on purpose, which means that if you're successful, they will do the in and out where you're less successful, more successful. That's even without counting intentional suppression of people who are in social justice.
Closing remarks as we wrap up.
Yeah. Gosh, I really just appreciate you having me. I think it's wonderful meeting other people who want to make impact in the world. So I think I would wrap with that as well. Like, find something you care about, find something where you can feel you are making tangible good to the people and animals around you, and then do that. And it will be its own reward. Just do it, stick to it. And then hopefully it grows into the sort of passion or brand that will genuinely change your life, your career, your community, the people around you. And the more you can find your purpose and tap into it, better everyone will be.
Thank you, Isri.
Thank you so much for having me.